Ladies and gentlemen, let's go banking. The banks are back in the box, this time facing small business who are throwing mud at them, and so far it's been Westpac copping the most of it. And given we're a nation of bank bashers, it's not surprising that we're enjoying the show. To give us the rundown on the latest display of dirty undies, I'm pleased to welcome back Brian Johnson. Brian is a banking analyst with CLSA. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Last time it was the Commonwealth that seemed to be copping the worst of it, but we've seen Westpac under the pump. It started off with Carolyn Flanagan. Tell us about her.
Well, it's a very sad story, but Ms. Flanagan had basically, as most people would, had given a guarantee for her children to buy a business. The whole idea of giving a guarantee is basically it's a way for the bank to basically avoid losses if the business doesn't work. What would appear in this case is that she probably wasn't in a position as someone that was legally blind to actually read the contracts. And once again, it's another example of some pretty sloppy paperwork by the banks, where they basically don't really take much of the risk and they get all of the lending margin. So it's a very poor story. And I think even Westpac would acknowledge the fact that it is a shocking story.
I understand they wanted to repossess her house.
Yes, yeah, she'll be a life tenant. So, you know, Westpac, but even that process took a long time to get it out of Westpac. So if she was to sell her house, then basically, that's when more problems would basically hit, because you'd lose her entitlement to a pension. But you know, the real thing about it is, Philip, and something that is becoming more and more apparent, is that I think banks, we have a hate but trust relationship, which is that we don't like them, but we kind of trust them. And we think that when we go and see a bank, when I go and ask, can I borrow $1 million to buy a house, I kind of trust them that they'll tell me that, yes, you probably can afford that. Whereas what they're really telling me is, I can afford to borrow $1 million if I want to radically change my lifestyle. And the really big danger here of everything we see coming out is that hate but trust is that you actually diminish the whole trust aspect of it.
I understand that the financial ombudsman found in favour of Westpac in this case.
Yeah, which I must admit I found staggering. But technically, did Westpac actually do anything wrong? Probably not. Probably everything they did was to the letter of the law. It wasn't quite in line with all of their procedures. But I've got to say, this Royal Commission have done an awesome job, because there were a tremendous amount of inconsistencies that kept on coming out during the paperwork. And I don't know that all of that was actually picked up during all the investigations. So, but there's kind of like a moral responsibility here. Banks basically function by virtue of the largesse of us as taxpayers. If banks don't run out of money because the Reserve Bank will always give them money if they need it. And I'd flag you, I think there's actually a moral responsibility that goes a little bit beyond just simply the legal requirements. And one of the tests that the Royal Commission is looking at is this concept of community expectations. And this is a very clear example of the bank basically not meeting those community expectations.
Tell me about Marion and her pie face franchise.
Well, this is another one where basically a pie face franchisee probably wasn't quite going as well as they would have liked. The master franchisor basically put them into contact. The numbers were probably overstated. They borrowed way too much money to buy a franchise, which basically went bust. So she's basically lost the business loan. Unfortunately, she had borrowed some money with one of her co-borrowers, and she ended up losing everything, because she ended up paying out the loan, not just for herself, but for the other people that borrowed the money in the
business. So she was effectively the guarantor for a co-borrower.
Correct. That's the way it looks like. And I must admit, when I heard it, and I'm not going to pretend that I've listened to everything, this has taken up a lot of time and I've a job to do it, but it just struck me at that particular point in time that it looked to me as though they had continually harassed her. And then basically when it came to the point of settlement where she thought she would get a little bit of cash out, they took the lot. And it's as I say, that community expectations is not what you expect from big profitable organisations in this country.
Brian, we're going to hear scores more stories like this where of irresponsible lending to people with little or no small business experience and flawed business models.
We certainly are. But I would say,
well, how can we protect people from themselves?
Well, that's you'd kind of think the law would protect them, and certainly, at the end of each of the round of hearings, Justice Hayne, the counsel assisting, they present their findings at the end of the day. It's up to Justice Hayne, Commissioner Hayne, to work out how he interprets them, and pretty consistently, they talk about how it would be open for Commissioner Hayne to find out that the banks have broken various laws and fallen well below community expectations. And we'll have to see what that means. But one of the things about it in Australia is that if you have a look at the existing penalty regime, the penalties for actually breaking the law from the companies are actually quite modest. Now, ASIC is proposing that they get ratcheted up, but certainly every bit of investigation I've done would suggest it's very hard to get those higher penalties imposed retrospectively. So I think... we're certainly looking at much bigger penalties going forward. But as far as really onerous penalties this time around, I think it's highly unlikely.
Talking to Brian Johnson, Brian, is it already becoming more difficult for small businesses to get loans?
Well, I think that's one of the results that will basically come out of this. And you'd have to think, when you go through the ramifications of this particular round, you'd have to think small financial penalties. Credit availability becomes much more disciplined. This idea of conflicted commission structures disappears. There's a whole lot of things, but you'd have to say that we basically go back to a much more disciplined environment. But one of the other things about it is that we shouldn't ignore. I think it'd be a pretty brave bank CEO in this environment that would dare move housing loan rates. And so I think one of the things that this probably does, at least for now, is it probably diminishes the pricing power of the banks that would otherwise be rising. But there is one more little twist here, which is the one product that doesn't seem to get any scrutiny here is deposits. And we can see that right now, as banks are facing a lot of competitive pressures on everything else, we can see that deposit margins are widening or deposit rates are going down. So once again, there's another lever they can pull to basically maintain where they are.
You're not suggesting that down the track there'll be sort of a disruptor, a sort of an Uber bank, are you?
No, I'm not. We used to, I've heard various people say, why doesn't the government set up a bank? And we used to have that, and that was actually Commonwealth Bank itself. I've spent a little bit of time having a look at some of these disruption models, and they sound absolutely fantastic. But the fact is that they're all trying to make a profit. And when you're small and you're subscale, you can't really be super price competitive in that environment. And so, the chance of disruption really massively impacting the banks, I think, is comparatively modest, because what makes new players work is a thing called the securitization markets, their ability to borrow money really, really cheaply. And securitization rates are up a lot higher than they were before the GFC. So, this thing about disruptors somehow coming in and cleaning it all up, I don't think that will necessarily happen.
I'm thinking of changing my career pretty late in the day, perhaps. But I think I'll become a compliance lawyer or a risk manager, because I think the banks are going to need more of them.
Yeah, well, look, with regard to AUSTRAC, we've had Commonwealth Bank already provisioned for a $375 million fine. That's their guess at what the fine may be, but it may well be a massively higher number. In the first half, they took $200 million of costs for all the project costs associated with all this kind of increased regulatory environment. I think in the last quarter, they've taken another $200 million, and I think they'll take another $200 million in the next half. So when we have a look at it, the costs that are flowing through, particularly for Commonwealth Bank at the moment, are massive. But it's really important not to lose sight of the fact for all these long-suffering Commonwealth Bank shareholders is that if you can get beyond that, Commonwealth Bank is an incredibly profitable bank because it's very profitable in housing lending and deposits. And so while share prices are well down and everyone's really glum on them, the fact is that they are tremendously profitable organisations. And I think I explained to you last time that in a world where the 10-year bond rate is, let's say it's around 3%, these organisations are doing anywhere between 12 and 15% return on equity. that's not a bad kind of return. But highly profitable banks feels to me as though it's a little bit of, as though it's a tax on the rest of society. But Philip, if I can just make one other point, and this is a really significant one. The Royal Commission, they're investigating and they're showing you case studies that they've identified are the worst of the worst. So they're there to make a very specific point. And what we do, even though I, as someone who's been watching banks, are quite appalled by some of the things I see, it would be incorrect to actually think this happens. You know, we don't know the frequency with which it's happening. We know it certainly happens, but we don't know the frequency. So I think it's a little bit dangerous to extrapolate this as every franchise line is like this.
Brian, thanks for that. Brian Johnson, banking analyst, CLSA. And coming up, we're off to Baghdad.
I've seen a hand, I've seen a vision. It was reaching through the clouds to risk a dream. A shadow crossed the sky and it crushed it to the ground, just like a beast. The old